You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we are back with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Allstriker of Ravens Wire. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts of your car, wherever you need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. And we return here. It is Tuesday, July 20th. We are under 10 days until the Ravens open up their 2021 training camp with their first full team practice on July 28th. And here with us, our regular Tuesday guest, Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. Spencer, we've been talking about it all offseason. We are finally right around the corner from training camp, and we're almost to that 2021 regular season. How you doing today?
Doing quite well. I am excited for training camp. We draw closer. My desire for football is burning with the passion of 1,000 fires. So I'm excited to get it going. I can't wait. It's about that time. You know, once the NBA finals are over, we're in the dog days of baseball for a little bit there, but then we're going to have preseason. I don't think people have probably ever been so excited for preseason football. It'll be the return of fans in many stadiums like M&T Bank Stadium. So it is the most highly anticipated preseason maybe ever. And I'm excited for it.
Yeah, it does feel that way. And people were, I think, before this whole thing complaining, oh, the preseason, you know, I don't like it, it's bad. Well, they cut it down to 3 games, the NFL did, but it just feels like there's something else in the air, and that will, yeah, be fans returning to stadiums. I know M&T Bank Stadium is thrilled, and the Ravens flock is thrilled to get back into M&T Bank Stadium. But Spencer, starting off here in this first segment, there was a lot of controversy over this past week or this last week about Lamar Jackson, and honestly, it was unfair controversy, unfair criticism. Lamar Jackson going out in the community and having his fun day with LJ and just being with kids in his community, putting smiles on their faces. But that included him running routes on asphalt on a basketball court. He was playing cornerback on the basketball court, you know, defending guys. And then even videos of him in sandals, just all these different things coming out. And the criticism was he shouldn't be doing that while he's about to sign a long-term extension. You know, Shannon Sharp said, you know, don't mess your money up being dumb, which, again, it's just stuff where it seems like out of any player, at least recently, a lot of people projecting on Lamar Jackson, you know, an injury, saying that he is going to get hurt at some point. Then this could be the trigger or that could be the trigger. And people are just anticipating, waiting for that injury. Spencer, why do you think people are so obsessed with a potential Lamar Jackson injury, even though he's been really, really healthy throughout the entire course of his career?
It is today's society's obsession with being right and winning a debate and wanting to feel affirmed and confirmed and smart and be right in the end. And it's just ironic because, you know, you want to talk about injury. Deshaun Watson has torn both of his ACLs. He's still very athletic and uses that very much in his repertoire to be a successful passer. Is he probably a better pocket passer than Lamar Jackson? Last year he was. He was incredible last year. One of the best deep ball throwers in the NFL as well, but still his time to throw is around, you know, closer to 3 seconds than not. He makes plays with his legs. They run RPOs. They run read option. Texans do things that utilize Lamar or Deshaun Watson's legs. But no one has that to say about Deshaun Watson because in college, I guess, Deshaun Watson wasn't as prolific of a runner. He is not as electric of a runner, but he is very mobile and capable as a runner. So people develop the thought in Lamar Jackson's time in college as a, you know, South Florida, very athletic, electric, athletic quarterback that because he was able to run for 1,500 yards, that means he can't be a good passer because they've never seen someone with Lamar Jackson's rushing ability. And Mike Vick was great. Mike Vick was an outstanding runner. He was probably faster than Lamar in a straight line, but he was not Lamar Jackson with a football in his hand. So people can't comprehend something that they haven't seen before. It is a wall that they put up, and they need to feel familiar, feel affirmed, feel that they were right, that Lamar Jackson can't be that successful. And a lot of people said, oh, you know, the comparisons you heard, Tim Tebow, All right, well, that's out the window. Tim Tebow, you know, never came close to winning an MVP, let alone scoring almost 80 touchdowns over 2.5 years. Then it's, oh, you know, RG3. Well, guess what? Lamar Jackson's been to the playoffs 3 straight years, and RG3 had basically one good year in Washington his rookie year, and he simply wasn't able to take care of himself. And that is the thing that people don't comprehend on the football field, is that Lamar Jackson avoids contact, whether it's ducking underneath of a hit and giving himself up. Well, he doesn't slide like, you know, Kyler Murray, who was an outstanding baseball player. He gives himself up. He falls down forward, gets his head under. And that fan, that awesome quote from, I can't recall who the opponent was, but there was a really high speed collision at around the 1 yard line on a Lamar Jackson run. And they're like, you know, are you worried, Coach Harbaugh, are you worried about Lamar Jackson taking care of himself? And he said, I think you should go to check the tape again and see who got hit. And you see two defenders collide on each other. So they can't comprehend that Lamar takes care of himself. They think that he has all this wear and tear. And while he definitely has some wear and tear from running, and, you know, has he taken some hits? Yeah, he's taken some hits, but it's a handful of times where you can point and say, wow, that defender really laid a lick on Lamar Jackson. The only one I can really think of that occurred past the line of scrimmage was a Thursday night game against the Jets. A linebacker scraped over top, and Lamar had been cutting back and dealing with a couple other defenders, and he caught Lamar square. It was one of the few times I've ever seen someone stick Lamar in the open field. It wasn't even necessarily open field, but ultimately just ties back to wanting to be right, wanting to feel smart, wanting to be confirmed. And I do think there can be some racial undertones to it as well, because it's, you know, that he should be a wide receiver and all these things. It's always said about the black quarterback. It's never said about Josh Allen. It's never said about Josh Allen, whose game is also very much predicated on running the football. But it's always said about Cam Newton, who has a similar build and somewhat of a similar profile as a runner to Josh Allen. So it just boils down to a few different factors. And in the end, people just simply want to be right. They want to be proven right. They want to, you know, go back to 2017 when they said, oh, Lamar Jackson won't make it 5 years in the league. But then again, just because someone, you know, and knock on wood here for Lamar, you know, you hope him health, but just because someone gets hurt doesn't mean that they can't play anymore, that they won't be the same, all that kind of stuff. It doesn't mean anything. I think that an athlete's ability to rebound from injury is more impressive than their ability to stay durable in many ways. And that's what I keep pointing back to Deshaun Watson for. So there's guys like RG3 who couldn't take care of themselves on the football field. And that's where it's going to happen. So if you think Lamar playing some catch and running around is one thing, then you want to go see Tom Brady jumping off of cliffs 10 years ago and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And it's just like, these are human beings, man. They can't just simply play football nonstop for 20 straight years and not enjoy themselves. Not even he's having a youth camp. Do you go talk about basketball players who have youth camps? You see all these videos of guys dunking on the kids, and the kids all go, oh, do you see that happening where people are like, oh, you shouldn't be doing that. You should only be on the court playing. And if you're against them, yada, 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 yada. It's like, okay. I don't know what to tell you here. So ultimately people want to be proven right. They want to discredit Lamar Jackson. They want to call it, you know, a gimmicky offense that, oh, by the way, led the NFL in scoring over the last 2 years. And oh, you know, he's not going to be able to stay healthy. All these kinds of things. I mean, it's been 3 years at this point. He has surpassed the expectations of many, many, many more people than had accurate expectations from him. So it is ultimately just a talking point in the middle of summer where people have one little tiny thing. And it's just today's society where people always have to try to find the negative. They always want to be right. So you go look at a young quarterback who is having his third or second annual fun day with LJ camp, where he provides meals and school supplies and equipment and a great time and wants to be a mentor and a role model in his community, in his hometown. And you have to spin it into something negative. And that is the major takeaway for people. So I think that says more about, you know, certain people who may have been writing articles about that and maybe their own lives and maybe their own self and their own negativity that they feel the need to project. But ultimately, it's summer, it's July, you're looking for something that'll stir up some drama. That's capitalist media. If you want to get clicks, then that's how you make the money. And, you know, some people would rather have a strong reputation for talking about things that actually matter, and other people would rather try to make easy money. So that's the split. That's the long and short of it. And I think Lamar Jackson's going to go ahead and keep having youth camps.
As he should. As he absolutely should. And, you know, The exact, I think the game you're talking about, Spencer, where the two defenders collided, I think it was Cleveland. It might have been week one.
Yes, it was
Cleveland. Yeah, I think it was Cleveland. And I remember that. There are videos of it, I think, on YouTube, on Twitter. But yeah, John Harbaugh said, go check that tape and see. You know, again, this is such, I don't even know what to call it, because you have a guy who does so much good in his community, and that was supposed to be the story. But because of the narratives and because of this and because of that, that positive attention was turned into negativity by whoever it was, whether it was Mike Florio, whether it was Shannon Sharpe. Where that attention was coming from, it doesn't really matter, because it took away from the big story, which was a quarterback, a star of an NFL team, doing so much good for kids, for his community, which is something he should be doing for a long, long time. But Spencer, you mentioned that, you know, with Lamar Jackson, he falls forward, ducks that head under. Compared to what you saw from him during, you know, his rookie year or dating back to his college days, have you seen an evolution from what Lamar Jackson has done to protect his body on the football field and avoid those big time hits and big time collisions?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that if you go back to Louisville, there were a lot of times of him trying to get yards after contact more so. And the one run that comes to mind in the NFL that is similar to what he would do in college to me is against the Houston Texans in the regular season of 2019. Lamar Jackson broke an awesome read option, makes the read defender miss, then he makes another defender miss, then makes another defender miss in the open field. Someone tries to chase him down and misses, and then finally there's a safety that can kind of make a little bit of an impact on him. He lowers his shoulder and runs right through him. You don't see that happen very often. He is willing to take a 2-yard play in traffic and give up much more so than he was at Louisville. He kind of just dives down on the ground. He kind of flops forward instead of sliding. And, you know, sliding, we've seen many quarterbacks get hit. Joe Flacco Thursday night against the Dolphins a few years ago, where you go to slide and someone just lowers their helmet and you're very vulnerable in that state, but you're still kind of able to duck a little bit more and move as you're diving down. So there can be some benefits while sliding might be a little bit more natural a lot of the time if you're capable of doing so, but just not really in Lamar Jackson's wheelhouse with the way he runs in terms of plyometrics. But he takes care of himself. He runs out of bounds. I think we've all seen him able to assess and do damage. And the man kind of reminds you of Reggie Bush in some ways. He just is able to process information and spatial awareness and speed at such a high level, at such high speeds rather, and is able to take care of himself that way. And I think it's been a big development. He doesn't feel the need to lower his shoulder as much and run through contact quite as much. He just kind of tries to squirt his way to where he wants to go and get down really quickly. So I think that's something the Ravens definitely worked on with Lamar and something that he's been made aware of. You know, the more hits you take, the less amount of years you're going to be able to play. Especially when you're the one trying to deal punishment. I mean, look at running backs, look at linebackers. Linebackers, a lot of time, are the ones dealing the punishment, and their careers tend to not be quite as long as a quarterback or a tight end or, a cornerback or wide receiver at times. So it's difficult to do, but Lamar's done a good job over the last couple of years and has never really consistently put himself in danger's way. You can't think back to a game where you thought, oh, wow, he's not taking care of himself. There might be a run here or there where you might say, oh, Lamar, you know, all right. Like, you know, don't stiff arm with your bare hand or something like that. But it's never like, wow, that Seahawks game, he really wasn't taking care of himself. He better be careful or he's going to pay for it. There's no example of that. When you watch all of his games over and over and over again, it's just, there's never a time where you think, man, Lamar Jackson needs to be careful here. So I think he's definitely learned to lose the battle to win the war a lot more. But again, he just processes information and has such strong spatial awareness that it doesn't matter a lot of the time.
Yeah, I am impressed with how Lamar Jackson has evolved in that area of his game, because at the end of the day, it's going to lead to a much longer career for him. And just because he takes hits, like every single player in the NFL takes hits, right? Just because, you know, quarterbacks like, you know, Tom Brady are playing well into their 40s, because they're not taking this, not taking that. Tom Brady played with a super huge knee injury, really critical knee injury for a lot of that 2020 season. So it's not like these guys are, you know, just because they stay in the pocket doesn't mean they're never going to get injured. Or just because a guy runs a lot, or just because a guy makes this many tackles doesn't mean that they're going to stay healthy. It's all relative. Injuries happen throughout the game. So just because Lamar Jackson is a dual threat quarterback doesn't mean he is, you know, scheduled to get injured at any point during his career. We're going to head into our first break now. And when we return, we're going to be getting into a bit of an AFC North conversation, talking about what the AFC North team should or shouldn't do with the remainder of the offseason. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all of UFC and MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And we are back with our second segment of this Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher still here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, kind of getting into a bit of an AFC North conversation here with you. I wanted to talk to you about moves that each AFC North team could make with the remainder of the offseason leading into the regular season. And I wanted to start off with Pittsburgh, because Pittsburgh did make a move yesterday, and that was signing pass rusher edge guy Melvin Ingram, someone who I know people had linked to the Ravens before because of their lack of a pure pass rusher right now based off of everything they have on their roster. So the Steelers, I guess they've already made their move. So what did you think about this move for Pittsburgh, Spencer? Do you like it for them? Is Ingram someone who can make an impact, especially with Bud Dupree leaving for Tennessee in the offseason?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the Steelers' strongest aspects last year was the fact that they were able to have Alex Highsmith come in as a rookie and play at a somewhat high level to replace Dupree. But nonetheless, there was a huge fallout in the success of the Pittsburgh Steelers without Bud Dupree, who was having an electric season and made himself a lot of money last year, really bringing things together as he progressed the last 2 years. So having that depth in Alex Highsmith was a big factor for them being able to kind of right the ship in the end of the season and not go full-blown panic mode defensively. Their offense was a different story, but in the end, the Steelers were reliant on TJ Watt. They were reliant on Alex Highsmith, and having depth again with Highsmith and Ingram, while, you know, there probably is a little bit of drop-off between the way that Dupree was playing prior to injury and maybe the combination of whoever's playing between Ingram and Highsmith, potentially there might not even be, it's a big drop off, but that drop off is not going to be a problem. And let's say TJ Watt's not able to go for a couple games, a huge loss, but having Ingram definitely softens the blow. So having that depth there for them is crucial. Their defensive front is very reliant on some pretty force outside linebackers that don't drop into coverage a ton. They want to win on the outside. They have very penetrating, exploding out of their stance. They have good get off. They want their outside rushers to have really strong get off and be able to take advantage of Hayward and Tuitt. And last year they had Alualu playing at a really high level. So I think it's a big, big get for them in that way. And it's, you know, Melvin Ingram's had some injury problems. He's a little bit on the older side, but he took his time. We'll see how rehabbed he is. And pass rushers just seem to be a little bit better on the Pittsburgh Steelers a lot of the time. They've for years been able to deploy a pass rush really successfully. And again, those guys, Hayward and Tuitt being inside, draws a ton of attention. Tuitt was the most double team defender on their team last year. And that's with TJ Watt being, you know, a defensive player of the year candidate, as well as Cam Hayward being an all pro player. So it goes to speak about how much they care about their pass rush, given the limited amount of cap space they have available, and seeing Dupree go on and maybe being able to soften that blow. And we'll see what Alex Highsmith does in year two, a player who seems to be pretty intelligent and also athletically capable that made a lot of noise last year and picked off Lamar Jackson at one point with a little bit of intelligence there. So it was fun to see that go down, and we'll see how this Pittsburgh Steelers defensive front shapes up.
Yeah, it will be interesting. Pittsburgh's defense obviously is going to be the, I think, strong suit of their team, although they did lose a couple of big playmakers. And I do think, you know, Ben Roethlisberger obviously is going to be the key to that team, whether they actually go far or not. But I do like the addition of Ingram. I thought he would be good in Baltimore based off of the skill set that he brought, but he goes to a division rival in the Pittsburgh Steelers. But Spencer, a team that I really like this year is the Cleveland Browns. You know, I have to admit it, despite this being a Ravens podcast, their roster is just so well-rounded at each position. They addressed their needs in the offseason, I think, pretty flawlessly. They added John Johnson, who is one of the best safeties in the league, in my opinion. They also you know, just overall fixed up a lot of their defensive issues that I think might have been holding them back a little bit. So it might be a little difficult to determine just what Cleveland could do with the remainder of their offseason. They did lose both Sheldon Richardson and Larry Ogunjobi in the offseason, so maybe defensive line is a concern for them. But where do you see Cleveland potentially going if they were to make one more move before this offseason ends up finishing out?
You think that they were going to be looking at the spine of their defense, and with a lot of safety options and Delpit coming back, they still have Ronnie Harrison as well as John Johnson now. And, you know, Joe Woods, their defensive coordinator, is not a huge base personnel guy. He's a big dime and dime backer proponent and likes to work with three safeties on the field a lot. So, you know, linebacker, they have Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, who to me is a good matchup player and is someone that has good length, and he can defend some RPOs in terms of coverage well, and has some pursuit skills a little bit, but is not really an engine type of player. He's not a foundational piece as much as some of the other linebackers in the NFL and some of the other linebacker prospects, even in this draft class, to me. So a lot of people were surprised to see him fall. A lot of people had him as a first-round grade. It made a little bit of sense to me for him to fall a little bit as just someone who's a nice matchup player, but not quite a safety and not – doesn't have experience playing a true inside linebacker position. So you look there. And as you mentioned, Richardson and Ogunjobi, the Browns are at a impasse in certain ways. They also lose Olivier Vernon last year, who was injured for most of the year. So they bring in Jadeveon Clowney, who's also had his injury problems. And that is a very scary duo between Clowney, who's such a stout run defender and is able to be disruptive while maybe not, you know, a 10, 15 sack guy ever in his career. He's capable of pressuring the quarterback and flushing the quarterback. And then you've got Myles Garrett on the other side. So when you're looking at that defensive front, you see them, they ended up bringing in, I believe, Marvin Wilson out of Florida State, who they got as a UDFA. And there's some interesting options for that defensive line, but ultimately it's going to be interesting to see how they're able to shape that defensive front with the likes of, you know, Tommy Togai. They also drafted Malik McDowell, another younger player. They do bring in Malik Jackson as a big signing as well. So Jackson, a player who's been injured. And then Jordan Elliott, a player that excelled last year. Andrew Billings, who played a ton of nose guard for them last year. So they've got a group of, you know, misfit toys in ways. And Malik Jackson, Jordan Elliott played well in some snaps. You got to think they're comfortable with Elliott if they're going to be letting go of Ogunjobi, letting go of Sheldon Richardson. So it's interesting to see there, but with two rookies, a second-year player, a third-year player, and then Malik Jackson, as well as your nose guard and Andrew Billings, it's an interesting situation and feels like they don't have a ton of talent necessarily, but Togai is a player that I liked as a three tech who is super quick and has a really strong punch and is able to kind of dictate some one-on-ones, especially against zone concepts. Has a little bit of ability as a pass rusher, but he's not terribly flexible in that aspect. And we'll see. So I think this is a very strong roster. They have depth at tight end. You know, receiver is an interesting position. They do have Odell Beckham coming back, who looks like he's ready to light the world on fire and prove to everybody that, you know, the Browns are better with him. Jarvis Landry is just going to be consistent again. And then they've got Rashard Higgins and Donovan Peoples-Jones. So you're looking there, you're looking at probably four or five receivers deep and looking okay. They could maybe stand to add one more that has a veteran feel to them. But ultimately, I'm looking at that defensive front. I'm looking at that linebacking core. You know, Mac Wilson is a player that didn't necessarily make enough of a splash last year in some heavier playing time. And they do have Sione Takitaki, who made some plays as well. So it's an interesting situation all around, and we'll see how it plays out. Jacob Phillips, another player that's you know, got the intangibles and got the athletic ability, and Anthony Walker and some guys there, but no real proven veteran, as well as Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah coming in. And what are they going to do with him exactly? Are they going to use him as a nickel, which is what the Notre Dame Fighting Irish used him at as a ton in that kind of rover position? So he was mainly unblocked, not able to shed blocks at a really high level. And what do you want to do against a team like the Baltimore Ravens that might be using some 12 and 21 and 22 personnel against you? A lot of people seem to think that three safeties is the answer, but as this Ravens offensive line has improved and as the Ravens are able to be a little bit more balanced, it's going to be a lot harder for teams to use those three safety dime looks and stop the run. And with Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins looking like they're ready to run through a wall, that's going to be a tough, tough matchup. But you like their chances against the Steelers, and you like the way they can match up against the Bengals as well.
Yeah, Spencer, and speaking of that other Ohio team in the Cincinnati Bengals, I know a lot of people were a little surprised when they didn't address their offensive line in the way that they might have expected. I know the Ja'Marr Chase versus Penei Sewell argument is over now. They obviously took Ja'Marr Chase. They did bring in Riley Reiff, and you know, it'll probably be an improved year from the Bengals offensive line, but you know, their top draft pick, Jackson Carmen, some people love the pick, other people did not like the pick. So is offensive line the one move you could see maybe Cincinnati making as the offseason draws to a close here, or do you look to another position maybe on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, it's a little bit difficult. The Bengals do have one outstanding safety in Jesse Bates that, you know, they also have Von Bell back there paired with him to make a, and Ricardo Allen now to kind of have a veteran safety group, and Jesse Bates obviously so supremely talented. But I look at that cornerback room as well, and the Bengals are feeling like a team that's ready to be a little bit scrappier and make some plays and you know, give some teams a run for their money. But they lose William Jackson, who was among their, you know, 2-3 best defenders, probably the best defender not named Jesse Bates on that defense. They bring in Eli Apple, they have Chidobe Awuzie as well, so a couple of guys that have been up and down and not necessarily fully proven. Then they've also got Tony Brown and Antonio Phillips, Darius Phillips, and they have Trey Waynes. They do bring in Mike Hilton, but what I would like to see for the Bengals to optimize them would to really try to make a move for a cornerback, maybe coupling a couple guys and throwing a pick here or there. If there's a cornerback available, I think that would go a long, long way in what they're able to do. They do bring in Larry Ogunjobi. They do get DJ Reader back. They also have Tyler Shelvin, who's going to be a hell of a nose tackle and nose guard for them. That's a formidable group there. So I looked at that defense and I look at that cornerback room, and it looks like a little bit of a spot of weakness. They did get Akeem Davis-Gaither in their linebacker room last year, as well as Logan Wilson. So we'll see what those guys can do with another year. Of course, Jermaine Pratt, who had some interesting words to say about the Ravens and what they were going to hold the Ravens to in week 17. And then J.K. Dobbins kind of ran right by him on a 70-something yard touchdown. But yeah, of course, you go and you look at that offensive line. You also, you know, you want to point out that they end up drafting Jackson Carmen, who played left tackle at Clemson. Some people view him as a guard. I think that, you know, a lot of people are quick to transition, to want to transition people on paper inside, but you got to give him a run there, see how he develops, see if you can tweak some things and have him play effectively there. And another interesting option they got in the draft was Deontay Smith out of East Carolina, who is very lean, very light. 6'5", but man, the Senior Bowl in Mobile and in some of the things he showed on tape, he plays a little bit too high. He did get some snaps at guard, and I think he is a little too high cut to be playing inside, but he has a really beautifully athletic pass set. He's got some length to him, just a bit, and he can move really well. He's got a mean streak to him as well, especially on speed rushes. He kind of really wants to run guys around the arc and try and get them on the ground eventually. So that's an interesting option. But looking at center, Billy Price has had a disappointing start to his career. Trey Hopkins has been a turnstile, and they do bring in Trey Hill out of Georgia, a rookie that is going to compete there. So Trey Hill may be an intriguing option year two, especially, but that interior offensive line, you know, not a great situation. I do think Jonah Williams was a little bit underrated last year as a tackle, and while he doesn't have the longest arms in the world, you like his ability to be in control of his reps. Not a lot of lows for him last year. And then Riley Reiff, I think a lot of Bengals fans that are happy with Ja'Marr Chase. Oh, Riley Reiff. Well, Riley Reiff wasn't exactly, you know, an ascending tackle anymore. And maybe you want to put him near the same category as an Alejandro Villanueva in ways, a guy that's started to have some pretty significant struggles at times, but now you're depending on him to really lock things down at right tackle and be one of the stronger pieces, if not the strongest piece on that offensive line versus, you know, you're looking at Alejandro Villanueva to just be an admirable, you know, second, third, fourth best option on your offensive line and man down that spot. So yeah, offensive line and, you know, that cornerback position, Mike Hilton was a big get, but boundary wise, how sure are you that Awuzie and Waynes and the rest of what they got there, Eli Apple is going to get it done. So corner is the position that I look at and I say, if they had a William Jackson still, that might pay some dividends, but they don't. And I think that's where they might be going in the draft next year.
Yeah, there are certainly still some holes on that Bengals roster, and while I think they'll be good in a couple of years, You know, I'm not sure that they can do enough for the rest of this offseason to fix what they have and become true contenders with the young talent they have, obviously led by Joe Burrow. You have Ja'Marr Chase in there, T. Higgins in that offensive talent. If they can get their defense right, I think they'll be one of the better teams in the AFC for years to come. But we're going to head into our final break here. And when we get back, we'll be taking a segment to talk about the Ravens and what they should do to round out this offseason. So stay tuned for that. And we'll be right back. This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure from pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Rock Auto prices are reliably low for every customer. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in there. How'd you hear about us, box, so they know we sent you? Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. We return. It is our final segment of this Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher still talking with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. And Spencer, we just got into the three AFC North competitors for the Baltimore Ravens and how they could, or how they already have, improved their team this offseason, but, or at least with the remainder of the offseason. But now we get to the main show here, and that is the Baltimore Ravens, a team that has a very well-rounded roster. The offense is electric. The defense has a pretty good mix of veteran playmakers as well as young talent. But I think there are a couple of weaknesses that some people do point to. Obviously, the biggest one that I've seen the most being that edge rusher position in terms of pure pass rushers. Guys like Tyus Bowser and Jalen Ferguson are going to get a lot more snaps than they did in 2020. And with that, could produce more from a sack perspective, pressure perspective. Also, some people are a little worried about the third tight end position, whether guys like Josh Oliver or Eli Wolf, Jacob Breeland could be that guy for them. Spencer, if the Ravens were to make a move, and if you believe they are going to make a move to round out this offseason, where would you personally like to see the Ravens improve their roster?
Well, you've got to look to the pass rush first and foremost. And I think that maybe as opposed to necessarily looking to make a huge move, we've talked about Justin Houston. You've talked about Justin Houston ad nauseum on this podcast. But if you're looking to do some honest, unbiased self-scouting and taking inventory of what you really think you have and kind of trusting your gut a little bit more and looking at Jalen Ferguson, looking at Odafe Owe, and looking at, you know, what you've got and how the fact that you do need to keep Pernell McPhee on a pitch count, especially through the regular season, being able to take inventory of that. And then also looking around the league and finding those poachable players, those guys who might not make the final roster, those guys that might not make it to the 53-man squad and you might be able to cut a deal for or claim on waivers. So going around and finding, you know, one guy that could maybe just provide a little bit of a boost as a situational pass rusher, a guy like Cassius Marsh last year who floated around, and I think he ended up on the Patriots after playing for the Cardinals and doing some things. You know, somebody who can just provide a little bit of a boost on third down if you're not liking what you're seeing, and being able to be honest and start maybe keeping tabs on the rest of the league. All right, who are we projecting to, you know, maybe not be a great team by the midpoint of the year, who's playing in a tough division and maybe doesn't have the quarterback play and a guy who's in a contract year or a player that, you know, is a little bit up there in age and might like to come to a contender, and being able to get ahead of that trade deadline early. So I think, you know, Justin Houston is a strong move if you do that self-scouting and take inventory. But again, you know, maybe Justin Houston decides to go elsewhere. It feels like the Ravens have been in talks with him and been flirting with him and waiting for this training camp arena, and how deep that's going to go, we don't know. How long Justin Houston's going to want to wait, we don't know. But you look at Yannick Ngakoue, you trade for him midseason, he comes in, he rushes the passer. So getting Justin Houston anytime before the season would be great. And I think that's a move that makes sense. And at this point, you know, Olivier Vernon doesn't feel like the Ravens are expressing a ton of interest there. Houston, a guy who's it's been healthy, played at a high level, and played on some really good teams. So ultimately, that's where you're looking. And other than that, you know, that tight end three spot, they already made their move with Josh Oliver. You've already made your moves at wide receiver. I guess the only other answer might be safety depth. If you're not pleased with Geno Stone or Darius Washington or Nigel Warrior, as these backup options, then that would be a move that I would like to see them really solidify, is that third safety. And again, you might be able to poach someone. You need to keep your ear to the ground and see what you can get when teams have a roster crunch towards the end of preseason. So it's adding that third safety and maybe adding that depth piece or that specific pass rushing force at outside linebacker. So those are the two areas I would look to. Offensively overall, you got to think they're going to be happy enough with some combination of Ben or Tyree at left guard. Villanueva seems to be, you know, what he is, an athletic, gigantic guy who's a little bit older now and on the back nine or the back three holes of his career, perhaps. So looking there is another area of maybe shoring up some tackle depth, but that's a lot easier said than done, as there's not a lot of 6'7", 6'6" guys with 35-inch arms like the Ravens like. So finding someone to present an upgrade is interesting. And I think maybe just trying to maybe settle Tyree Phillips in as a tackle for a little while could be beneficial, but I wouldn't entirely discount him out of that left guard race. And other than that, you know, Nick Boyle comes back, Ronnie Stanley comes back. You've made your moves on offense. You've got two backs you're really happy with. And ultimately, you know, it's looking to safety. It's looking to outside linebacker.
Yeah. And, you know, you could even look back to a move that the Browns made with Ronnie Harrison, where that was right before the year. I know the Ravens were linked to Ronnie Harrison for a time, but the Browns ended up getting him, and now he's a really important part of their defense. So as teams start to cut down their rosters, as teams start to identify players they might not want or need on their roster, this is the perfect time for the Ravens to maybe go out there and make that final move, whether it is a signing, whether they're just waiting for guys to be cut, or whether it's a little bit of a trade here and there to, you know, kind of solidify the last couple needs on the roster. But Spencer, that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for once again coming on the show here today. And when we get back here next week, we'll be just days away from the start of Ravens training camp, and it'll be an exciting vibe here on the show.
Absolutely. Can't wait for it. Thanks again for having me on. Make sure to give Kevin, the man who brings you the best daily Ravens coverage, those 5 stars, share this podcast with a friend, and give the man his flowers. So make sure to follow me at Ravens4Dummies on Twitter. You know, you can find the Baltimore Beatdown Instagram. You can also find my work at BaltimoreBeatdown.com as well. So thank you so much for having me on, and have a great rest of your Taco Tuesday and rest of your week, everyone.
Yeah, be sure to go give Spencer that follow. Be sure to catch up with all of his content. He puts out great stuff all the time. But that's all that we have for you today here on Locked On Ravens. When we get back here tomorrow, we'll be answering your questions with our mailbag. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.